Welcome to Executive Stories, a podcast series hosted by me, Brad Vinnie. Come on a journey with me as we explore not just the businesses, but the personal lives, the backstory behind remarkable directors and senior executives. Today's episode of ExecutiveStories.com takes a look behind the scenes of the life of Matthew Horton, co-founder and CEO of Found You. Found You is a Brisbane-based startup in the digital platform area, a software as a service product, which has as its goals to be a one-stop shop for all workforce management issues, all the way through from onboarding, recruitment, payroll, and management of labor forces. The journey began about 3 years ago when the boys saw the issue that they were trying to solve, and to say that the journey has been what they had anticipated is anything but. The solution has become far more comprehensive than they ever expected, and now that they've raised money, they are on the scale-up phase and doing a really good job of it. Their solution really is second to none, and I encourage everyone out there who is in this area and in need of some solution to help manage their workforce better to reach out to the guys at Found You. Matthew Horton, co-founder of Found You, thanks for coming on Executive Stories.
Thanks, Brad. Lovely to be here.
I'm going to jump straight into this like I always do. You told me before this interview that your friends would describe you as loyal but a bit mad. Tell us a little bit about the bit mad part of Matthew Horton.
Well, I think probably my recent activities with this startup, you have to be a little bit mad, obviously, to be part of a startup. I think there's a saying, I'm not going to say it's mine, that you have to be mad enough to actually start on the journey, but sane enough to be able to, you know, pay your way along and work out which direction you're going in. Look, I've had a variety of different working roles, and I think in each one of those, it'd be fair to say that people around me in those environments have thought I'm a little bit crazy. Just a little bit.
I think there's a bit of truth to that. But like, what is it? What is it about you that is crazy? Like, what would your wife say? What would Jules say about you? Would she say you're crazy?
Oh, she would definitely say I was crazy.
Yeah.
She would be the first person to say I was the mayor of Crazy Town. Not in a bad way. I think that, you know, sometimes you can be crazy, can actually being overly emotional about things. Crazy's wearing your heart on your sleeve about things. And it's actually, you can have some sort of real deep senses of, you know, and I suppose I threw the word loyalty in there, but just the desire to actually be successful when you're pursuing a goal. You know, I hark back to a few different parts in my life where we've, you know, when we sort of pulled ABC Learning Centres out from the ashes and sort of going around and meeting all the parents and all the staff of that and addressing them. And so you get to that point where you actually become part and parcel of this emotional roller coaster. And to actually do that and not be able to emotionally detach yourself probably is why I think I'm a little bit crazy as well. You stay true to yourself, you stay true to the people that are working for you. And to do that and to lack that ability, as I said before, to detach yourself requires you to sometimes not quite be sane.
The way I look at it, and I think my staff would say, and my partners, that I'm a complete lunatic, is to have a bit of a funny bone as well about the world.
Yes.
Because just not take everything always so seriously.
Yes.
Doesn't mean you don't take your clients and your business seriously, but you can actually have a lighthearted nature about the world. And like, I love to, one of our account ladies, I like to talk to her and sing, what's your latest song that you've been singing to your grandson on the phone? Because this is what I do. I'm singing songs to my daughter.
Yep.
And who sings? You're a partner of a law firm. You're not meant to be singing nursery rhymes in the in the corridor. But for me, I'm just like, well, that's me being a little bit crazy.
Well, I think that's you having a personal relationship with somebody. And it's probably a little bit sad that people think that's crazy in a workplace. I mean, your workplace is a little more staid than ours. I should say. You know, we one of our principles of our company is to be bold and have fun. So, you know, we will work ridiculous hours. We'll get feisty with one another from time to time, and there's some lovely, you know, very positive tension goes on between the different parts of our business, but everyone sort of does it with in a spirit of good fun. And you know, I think one of the girls here is getting married soon, so we've had a wedding dress out when it came in and had a look at it. And we often have the kids here, my children. There's only a few other staff members that actually have children, but the rest haven't, they're not quite of that age yet. So, but it's sort of just keeping a little bit of a spirit up, and you know, they're sort of, you have to be a little bit crazy to be able to do that, rather than be constantly checking the customer list or the bank balance.
You mentioned before about loyalty as well. What is it about loyalty that is so important to you? Because when you said that your friends would describe you as loyal, I think another way of potentially saying that is that you value loyalty in others as well. How important is it to you?
Look, I think it's crucial, and I think sometimes when I use the terminology, I think I sort of could interchange when I'm using the word loyal with having resilience and perseverance. I think that to actually stick a task and to stick them out is actually probably one of the first measures of loyalty that I see. Being blindly loyal, you see, there's good loyalty and bad loyalty. Being blindly loyal doesn't really result in anything positive happening. But it's this resilience and perseverance that I see in that sort of, you know, you embark on a journey, whatever that journey is, and you are hoping to be standing with the same team when you get towards the end of the journey. You know,
you're loyal to the cause, loyal to the people.
That's right. In terms of loyalty to people that I work with, don't ever cross the people I work with. And that's happened from all the way through my career, whether it was junior solicitors being abused by clients, or people on the other side of negotiating tables having a crack at our tax advisor, I think it was, when I was at Rio Tinto once. I think that you protect your own, and I think that's probably a character trait that sort of just sometimes works well, sometimes you should take a step back and have a deep breath. And I have no doubt that character trait comes from my father, who grew up in Brixton in the UK, and sort of, you know, he had it tough when he was growing up, and sort of think he had to fight for everything he got. So it probably is a deep seated in there. Well, I'll blame him at least.
Thanks, Mr. Horton, for that one. So you're talking about the people that you work with. You have two other co-founders. There's three co-founders that found you. Where did you guys meet, and was it loyalty at first sight, or was it strictly just businessy kind of relationship that you had?
Look,
tell us a bit about Tyson.
Michael and Tyson are half my age. Good enough as half my age, I suppose, is one way we could put it. I met them through some contacts that I'd met at a mining function, and there was a chap there who said they had this idea. And the idea that they had at the time was to electronically match candidates for roles in a labour hire setting with available jobs. We've sort of taken the concept, that little concept, and grown on it significantly over the last 4 years. This was about 4 years ago, maybe even longer. So when I first met them, it was in a warehouse at the labour hire firm that they were working for, out in the western suburbs, out past Jindalee. And I think they were quite nervous. I still refer to them as 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds. They have actually added years in the 4 years we've been working together. but they had sort of these fancy cakes that they'd procured from some local bakery, and they had them all out on a plate. And I actually went out there with Jules, because the concept was a HR concept, and we were going out to have a look and my wife's a HR expert, so we were going out to have a look. And I suppose I wouldn't say it was a loyalty at first sight, Brad, but I liked the cut of their jib. I liked what they had sort of thought about. I sort of thought they might have needed a little bit of direction when they told me that if they only got 0.5% of the world's working population onto their then, had a different name back then, platform, that they would have some number that I think had about 27 zeros at the end of it as revenue. You know, I said to them, well, you could solve some debt issues for Obama with that number there, and might need to work on that. So we had to sort of...
A dose of realism from the man with a bit more grey hair in the room at the time?
Yeah, I think so. And sort of, I think that's probably the main thing I've brought to the entire organisation. I think that that's my role. There are things that we're doing now that probably all three of us said we couldn't do 3 years ago and we wouldn't be able to do. And so you sort of, the dose of realism has to have changing horizons. But, you know, the proactivity and the way the team works and the responsiveness and the ability for Michael and Tyson to be able to get the best out of the people around them because they are of a similar age. We run a very flat structure here. It's very rare that any decisions are left to me or even to Michael Tyson and myself, hiring decisions.
So what are Michael and Tyson's technical kind of skills?
Michael is an accountant. So he's got a business background. And Tyson has self-taught himself over the last 4 years how to do everything you need to do in the tech side. So he doesn't actually code, but he knows how to test code. He doesn't do payroll. Michael does payroll, but Tyson knows how to build any aspect of any payroll system. He's probably one of the smartest self-taught payroll people getting around. So really, we have three distinct pods in the group. We've got Tyson's team, which is the software development team. There's customer success, which is part of the team that Michael's part of. Michael also... And I do BD and look after the corporate sort of activities. Michael sort of has a sort of unstated role that he has to do absolutely everything that's not BD or software development to make sure that Tyson and I have clear air. So anything at all that is not where we're focused, he just makes sure that he runs interference on that for us.
So have those roles amongst the three of you evolved over time, or did you sit down one day and have a conversation and articulate it like you just did then?
Oh, that's a good question. Geez, we're starting to have been here so long you forget these things. I think they probably evolved over time. I think early on when we were doing this, you know, we actually had set up a couple of labour hire firms in education and in construction to beta test what we were doing, and I think Michael was very much involved in running those. Tyson sort of naturally gravitated towards the devs. We got our first dev on, we got our second dev on. When we first joined, we had a chap on that Michael managed. Probably managed him pretty poorly, which is why Tyson took it over, I don't know. But he didn't last long. But it's sort of, I think it's just been a natural evolution. And we haven't always had a product to sell. You know, we've only really had that in the last 12 months. So
it sounds like a healthy marriage in a way. You don't sort of give each other specific roles in a marriage. You just kind of just do. You know, you were showing with me before this interview started the way that your evening's going to pan out with your wife and your five kids, and it all just kind of working out because everyone's pitching in, doing their thing, rolling with the punches, and
I think that's right. You hope you're running at the same pace. Sometimes you can't run at the same pace, and I'm probably the most at fault on that, Brad. I'm the one that goes out and in the middle of a demonstration will say, yes, the platform can do that. Yes, the platform can do that. And I'll come back and tell Tyson, he'll go, what the hell have you done? You know, that's a month's dev work in that, what you just said. I think I told you before the interview that, you know, 60% of the platform has actually been basically suggested or built, if you want to use a term, by our customers and our customers' suggestions. So it's been a healthy sort of drive on the way through that. We have regular meetings between the three of us to see where we're up to. We obviously, with however many platforms we use internally here to measure work, the Atlassian product, Slack, I can't keep up. I wish we could just revert back to old-fashioned email, but they don't even talk to me on email anymore. I have to go into Slack and work out what's going on, and you can't follow your Slack messages, so it kills me. But
there's a constant record of them, which is fantastic.
There is, and certainly in Jura, the Atlassian product we use, it's I can jump on there any time and see what's going on. So you're never wondering what's going on. You're never wondering what any of our developers are doing. You'll always wonder how long something's going to take, and you'll never know that. But it's all there. It's almost as if you've got too many tools in some respects.
That ingredient that you talked about before, about how the Foundry platform's been built largely in consultation with your clients, that's a lesson that a lot of startups really need to listen to, because it's easy to talk about it in theory and say, are you solving a problem that someone needs solved?
Yeah.
And then actually taking that a step further and saying, are you tailoring it to your customers' needs?
Yeah. I mean, we use an analogy that we don't expect our customers to press B6 on the chip machine on the wall and to get delivered salt and vinegar chips. They can have whatever flavor chips they want. So we will hold true to the fact we're very much a white labeled product. From about page two of your platform, you are having it configured for your business from the get-go. Every single business in the place, in the space we occupy, is actually doing something differently. There's six different ways to interpret most of the awards in Australia, and people interpret them differently even inside their own businesses between two venues. So there's no magic plug and play sort of model. We were always going to face that when we chose 3 years ago to be end to end, from recruitment all the way to offboarding, all the way through payroll, rostering. We were always going to have to be a little bit pliable and understanding that people do things differently. Had we chosen just one particular aspect along that journey, we might have been able to be a bit bolshier and actually say to people, no, this is how you will do it. This is one of the reasons we haven't yet gone into performance management or OC health and safety, because then you get down to another layer of multitude of different ways people do things. We'll build bookshelves for people to put their safety observations on. We'll build bookshelves for people to put their interviews during a performance review on, but we're not going to play God and tell them how to do it until we can get our heads around how to build a Laravel framework that lets people pick and choose from a drop-down menu what they want to be, how they want that to look, and have any manner of optionality. We won't do it.
But because you need to anticipate what they might want to have in those drop-down menus to start with, and that takes time and listening again. And
the process has started. So we are starting to talk to our customers now about developments that we won't be releasing until 2018, late 2018. But we're starting that knowledge journey and just testing and trialing things, and we'll beta test it. One of the things we do is we spend a lot of time wireframing and writing playbooks, and it's just how we approached it. Well, I didn't read in any book or anywhere that that's what you do when you have a tech startup, but I've kind of, at the beginning when I didn't have a product to sell, I wanted to work out how I was going to add value. And one of the things I can do is do a little bit of work on Excel. One of the things I can do, fortunately being an ex-lawyer, Brad, is writing.
We're the salt of the earth, Matthew. Pillars of the community, you know that.
Yeah, I'm sure. Is write a good story and actually test things and apply logic to things. And I think our devs love it, because when our devs get given task to do, they're not just told, here, can you go off and solve for time off in lieu because we need it at this particular customer that's coming on board. They get given the whole playbook, they get given Excel spreadsheets that show the calculations, and they just rip in from that point, and we can dev things so much faster because we do that.
Context is everything, isn't it?
It is. Because the Australian IR environment, we describe it as this 16-sided Rubik's Cube. I mean, it's complicated. We get asked when we're going to go to New Zealand. We get asked when we're going to go to some of the to Singapore recently. Solving for payroll and IR in those jurisdictions, we hope, is going to be easier than it is in Australia. We think we've started at one of the more difficult places. But giving people the context to actually get past having to Google what is time off in lieu and getting some ridiculous answer, and then working from there. If you're a developer that's likes looking at black screens and coding, reading Wikipedia on toil isn't sort of where to start. So we sort of get them through those gates and show them what it is and write an explanation on how it applies and how it's activated.
And I guess there's that you applying your less techie kind of approach to a problem to trying to have a happy marriage with the tech guys. Talking of the tech side of things, where do you source your... Because your team is in-house. It's not in the Philippines, for example.
No, we've got everybody, team of 10, they're all here, except one. And Ben, who worked for us here for a while, he works in Germany. I'm going to say outside Dusseldorf, but I just every time someone asks me, I just mention a different German city and don't get corrected. But Ben does a lot of our rostering stuff. He helps us chase the sun a little bit as well. You know, we do like our devs to sleep. Not that we get that many sort of bugs or issues happening overnight, but at least he's got a watch all the time on our Zen desk while people are getting some sleep between 10 and 6. So that sort of helps. And if it's something Ben can't deal with, he'll jump up. So, yeah, we've sourced them here. We've used agencies, and then we sort of use people that know people. And we have intentionally targeted different people at different stages of our growth. You know, we've got devs that have been very, very deep in the framework we've got now. We've got other devs that have come in and they're just learning from the go, but they're sort of, we don't call them juniors, but they've got a way to go through the process. We've got people that have worked in payroll before. We've got people that have worked with tax before. So we've been able to sort of really get into those types of things with people running at a good speed at the sort of problems.
And so why not the Philippines, though? Why not a cheaper cost centre? And why under your own roof as well?
Look, I haven't got any empirical evidence either way to say that it's better. But I answered the question that you just asked in an empirical fashion. Mm. And I say it's the equilateral triangle of cost, time and quality. And you want to keep those angles exactly as they are. Something might be half the price to do in the Philippines or somewhere else and take you twice as long. And the quality might be not quite at there. When we decided to do payroll and to challenge the Australian sort of put in all the Australian awards and EBAs and everything else that we've got on our platform, you kind of need to be doing the interpretation of that face-to-face. Mm. You kind of need to be able to go around to a Ronald or a Saqib or a James or an Eddie and say, hey, where's this up to? And they go, I'm just jammed at this particular point. And you go, well, what that actually is, you know, what that means is. So, look, our customers love it. Our customers love the fact that they can phone someone up that's in our dev department and have a chat about things. We don't let all the customers phone through there, of course, but if there's people that want specific developments and someone needs to get their head around it, they'll travel to Brisbane to sit down with the dev team and explain it to them. Which
Jeez,
is
that's customers that are really engaging with the product.
Absolutely.
So found you, cloud-based product, everything tech. You're an older fashion guy, you seem to suggest. Do you do things the old-fashioned way still?
Oh, I like my emails, as I said before. And you had to sit through the excruciating half an hour before we started this interview where I'm actually just booting or loading up a new laptop. So that's an exercise that I'll give up on shortly this evening and get someone that's younger to fix me tomorrow. Look, are any of us old-fashioned anymore? I don't know.
I think an example, though, something that even sprung to mind was you were talking earlier about, before we got on the podcast, about how you have a place up the coast and the kids have a room downstairs, TV, they hang out, your room upstairs, no TV, reading.
Yeah, don't worry, there's any number of devices upstairs that we might be watching Netflix on with our headphones in, so it's not quite as puritanical.
Now, here I was thinking that there's, chamomile tea and you and Jules sitting around with the paper open, sort of pontificating about the latest story in the Australian.
No, it would be, I don't think so. Look, we do like just going to the beach and escaping. We don't really get that much time to do it, and I'm not going to pretend to any of my shareholders that are listening, that's because I'm working 7 days a week.
That's because I've got a lot of kids and they have a lot of sport. And we're actually in a sweet spot right now, September, in between rugby, netball and cricket and water polo, where we can actually get away for the next few weekends and have some nice time up the coast. But we're very, very fortunate that a long, long time ago we sort of were able to buy a very small place up there that the kids, you know, it's not much more than camping, but the kids have really got an anchor back. And we got to Perigean Beach, which is south of Noosa, and it's sort of been their home, really. I think we've basically had the place up there for all of their lives, four of them, and that's sort of, they don't know anything else, and they're just locals. Shoes off, walk to the beach, walk down, and just, it sort of takes you back to how things, I suppose, used to be when we were growing up. And you're probably a lot younger than me, Brad.
So I was about to say,
yeah, thanks for that.
Don't tell me with that brush.
No. But yeah, that sort of that feeling of freedom. And if they want to walk home from the beach or walk down to the shops, we sort of let them go and do it. And, I don't think you should take that away from kids, because they don't get that opportunity that often. We do get the occasional pleas from our 8-year-old when he comes home from school. Can we go to America? And my friends are going here and my friends are going there.
Well, I hope you say yes, of course.
Well, one day we say.
Except you're working hard for your shareholders.
Well, on that one, you know, we will say that we're working hard for our shareholders, and for our staff and for our customers. And 2 weeks driving around America mightn't be on the agenda just yet.
Not just yet. No. So with five kids, a startup which is scaling right now, really in that scale phase, how does Matthew Horton find time for himself?
I think that you can probably always find more time for yourself. The glass of wine you've kindly lubricated me with while we're speaking is sitting on a book that's called The Milford Trails. I'm obsessed with places and journeys. I've walked the Milford Trail a couple of times. I try and get to
for New Zealand. In New Zealand, for those who don't know.
Yeah. And I try to, there's a couple on my, I won't call it bucket list, but if we go where we're hoping to go here, there's a walk in Europe that I'd like to do, and that's kind of where I find time for myself. And I'll go with our dog and just walk up through Mount Coot for a couple of hours on the weekend and contemplate things there. But really, you know, I don't know if this is old fashioned or whether this is new age, but sort of your health is important, and just making sure that any time you do have for yourself, you look after that. But I don't know, my place isn't with the family, and it's here. And, you know, the little Apple lady tells me when I get in my car, when we finish the interview, that it's 2 minutes to home. So it's, yeah, we're very, very lucky to be where we are and to just enjoy what you're actually doing. I mean, I will read, but, you know, by the time I've read 20 pages these days, I'm usually asleep, which is a good thing.
If I'm asleep within about 2 pages, I think mission accomplished.
Exactly.
At the moment.
Yeah.
So just listening to you there, though, about walks, Milford Trail, walking at Mount Coot with the dog. My wife recently did a Myers-Briggs course talking about the different personality types.
Yes.
And we're talking about, where do people get their energy from? Is it inwardly or is it outwardly? Would you say that you get your energy and your recharge from spending time alone, being able to walk on a cliff top or something, or just Mount Coot even? Does that really recharge your batteries? Or is
no,
it being around other people?
I think it's the opposite. I think I need an Elon Musk battery pack next to me and get the charge off other people. I think it is. I think the charge that comes from successfully going and demonstrating the platform to a large franchise group and seeing their reactions and getting their feedback, that's sort of what drives me at the moment. And when the kids come in here and James and Lucinda came in and worked during the last school holidays. Well, it was interesting because Lucinda was fantastic. She had to put a whole bunch of employees in a large fast food retail, fast food franchise store. So she was entering data because we couldn't get a CSV file quickly enough to do the demonstration. And she worked in the customer success team. James had to work for Michael and do a little bit of filing in the accounts area. I had nothing to do with it at all. They had to each respectively speak to Rowena, who looks after customer success, and Michael about their pay rates, about the hours they worked. Anyway, about halfway, three quarters of the way through James's first day, he came in to me and said, "I'm going now." And I said, "Well, Dad, mate, there's three more hours left in the day. I don't know what you're doing." He goes, "No, when I was with Michael, he said that there was a 24-hour to 48-hour probation period, and that if I didn't work properly, he could get rid of me in 24 to 48 hours. And I said, "Well, what have you been doing out there?" And he goes, "No, well, actually, I negotiated with Michael that that should be a two-way clause, and I don't like it, so I'm going home. So see, you haven't passed my probation, Dad. I don't like doing the accounts." So.
Yeah, well, speaking from a legal perspective, he's spot on.
He is. He did well, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He did. Hey, being a co-founder of a startup, and just throughout your career and generally speaking, do you tend to make decisions with your head or your heart, do you think?
Probably my heart. I think that in essence it's from the heart, but I'm a spreadsheet tragic, so I'll model things within an inch of their life. We'll model things that haven't even happened here within an inch of their life, and we'll do variances all the way through and know exactly where it's got to, where we hope it's going to go. So we certainly will apply logic to financial decisions and other decisions that need to be made, like should we employ Max or should we employ Rowena or Renee? I think that's somewhere where we sort of we'll just anchor back to our hearts, and three of us will get together and go, "What did you think?" You know, it's probably 70% heart.
And does that sort of translate into other areas of your life, do you think?
Definitely. You just do things that you believe in, that you're passionate about, and you understand the consequences of being wrong of that call. I think that that's something that serves you in good stead. There are so many tools out there now, Brad, that can do the analytical part of it. You know, I mean, even in your short working life, just modelling and things like that and analysis has got so much better that at the end of the day, there is, I think, on any decision, because any business analysis can put a case for and a case against on exactly the same set of facts. You know, it just depends on how you read things, how you apply them. And you need to really have that gut feel about whether you think something's right or wrong. Was it the right decision to go end-to-end with our platform and probably extend, you know, certainly extend our software development period by a year or more, but at the same time create an almost unbounded total achievable market, we had to make those calls, you know. And geez, along the way, did we stop and think, geez, I wish we'd just stayed to a job matching thing. That would have been a lot easier than what we've done.
And sure, cheaper.
Many times. Many, many times. So that decision was a decision where we went and looked at all the market and just went, you know, there's a gap here. There's people that say they are, but they're not. And we're going to do this. So that's, yeah. And I don't think we're alone now. I think there's probably people chasing it. People say they are end-to-end. Obviously, some of the larger enterprise stuff you can do is end-to-end. But
and I think you'll start reaping the benefits of that in the very short term.
Yeah, we will. Yeah.
I like to think that I think with my heart, but I think at the end of the day, I do end up thinking with my head quite a bit. I think I speak from the heart, but yeah. I think with my head, you know, with my decisions, I'm very analytical about, you know, like we're building a pool at the moment. Yeah. And the amount of time that I've driven my wife crazy talking about what tile I'm going to get, and yeah. She's just like, who cares?
No,
and really, who does care? But for some reason,
I would be the giver of absolutely no F's about the colour of the tiles or what the tiles are. Do you think that's a professional thing, though?
No, not at all. Not at all, because I never thought I was going to be a lawyer.
Yeah, okay. But some people would probably suggest that you pontificating over the tiles is a matter of heart, not head. The person that actually goes, they're $23 a metre, they look all right, put them on the side, has actually made the other decision. I think it could flip the other way around.
Yeah, quite possibly. Whatever it is, I think that Lucy wishes that I wasn't like that. Because it's funny, like I've thought about it so much, and a bunch of decisions which I've made recently, I've had all of my contractors come up and say, with the tiles, the first tile choice, you know, I told him what I wanted, and he said, oh, just checking on your tile choice. And yeah. I said, well, why? And he said, oh, because they're disgusting. I went, oh, geez, okay. And then we had to get some painting done recently. We had to get, like, the side of the house repainted. And I was just like, can you just repaint the side of the house the way that it is? Mm. And just before he was about to start, he goes, so you want to paint it this color again? I go, yeah, why? And he, well, your house, let's just face it, it doesn't look great, mate. And I was like, oh, okay, so maybe... So he talked himself out of work.
Yeah.
He was that passionate about making sure I didn't paint my house again the wrong colour. We bought it like this, and I was just sort of painting it the way it was.
Do you think he might be just a frustrated home decorator? Yeah. He just turn his interview around now.
Possibly.
Yeah, I think he might be.
What, and what, too much Better Homes and Gardens at 7:30 on a Friday night? The fact that I know what time it starts is very scary.
Tonya Todman. The fact you got a key ring with Tonya Todman on it, I think it's your wife.
I can't believe that you know who Tonya Todman is.
I'm worldly.
So what are you expecting at home? You mentioned Tonya Todman second time today to me today. Is there anything at home?
Yes, I made a rash decision from the heart this morning and authorised the children to paint one of Lucinda's timber pieces of furniture. I think it was pretty much to Jill's chagrin, and she was rolling her eyes at me, but I told them they could go to the local hardware store and they had to buy proper paint, and they had to take the piece of furniture outside, put down a towel, put down a sheet, and sort of we set them up. When the text message came through at about 1:30 with one of my son's arm painted completely white, I thought that perhaps we'd been a little bit rash in relation to that. So I suspect what's happening now is that before we go to dinner, someone is busily trying to clean their white arm.
Do you reckon any paint made it onto the bookshelf?
Lucinda is actually quite fanatical and pernickety, so she would have made sure that it got done properly. I suspect they're
probably... Primer.
Whole thing. I suspect there probably would have been a few industrial disputes during the exercise, and I think people would have walked off the job. There would have been different sort of mediation would have had to take place.
Absolutely. You know what you need? You need a workforce cloud solution to manage the five
perhaps we
people
do.
At home.
Perhaps we do. Yeah.
On that
they
note...
They would be certainly very... proficient at using the iPhone to register themselves and to put out their shifts and to lodge their timesheets. They'd be world experts at that.
Fair enough. Hey, thank you, Matthew, for sharing your time with me tonight. I think we've almost gone through a bottle of wine while we've been here because it's been too long since we caught up.
True.
And it is after hours, and I believe that it's what better way to catch up than over a bottle of Cabernet and... a bit of a chat, so thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to have a chat, and good luck with it. Cheers.
A massive thanks to Matthew Horton for his time tonight. It's been a really great conversation. And remember, if you need to get in contact with me, please reach out to me on LinkedIn, Brad Vinning, or go and visit the executivestories.com website. Love to hear from you. Till next time.